It was many years ago now that Sue and I went to West Virginia to take a lapidary class on wire wrapping stones in order to make jewelry. Our teacher was a man in his 70s or 80s who would have us come to his gem and mineral shop where he would show us videos and help us fine-tune our own work. So we were there for about a week, going in every day for several hours. Now, one of the things that I remember vividly in this man's shop was the radio show that he had on every day. Now, I had never heard this radio talk show before, nor did I know who was speaking. So when we left the shop for the day, I asked Sue about the talk show. I should admit to you that I asked Sue lots and lots of questions. You see, she really does know a lot more than I do about everything. And it used to be that she would answer me, as in this case. More recently, however, she is more likely simply to look at me, smile her beautiful smile, and say, "Google it." Yes. I didn't ask her for permission. She got home late last night. However, I hope you're okay with this. The conversation with Sue went something like this. This is me. The man who was speaking on the radio, I assume it was a satire like Jon Stewart or Stephen Colbert, right? Sue answers, "No." "Well, how can that be?" I ask. "What that man was saying had little to do with anything factual. In fact, that means that they were all lies. And his perspective is bizarre. He's kind of creating his own scenario and story because there's no truth to anything he's saying." "And," said Sue, "many thousands of people in this country listen to him." "But why would you listen to someone who is telling lies or making things up? What this talk show host says then is also fostering violence and hatred. How can he get away with that? Who is this guy anyway?" And she said, "Rush Limbaugh." Now, I knew the name and his reputation, but I had never actually heard him speak. "Well, this is scary stuff," I said, "and actually it's kind of crazy-making. Why don't we have anti-hate laws?" "Google it." Actually, I'm kidding. That was way before Google. That was my introduction to right-wing talk show hosts. And it was appalling to me. It still is. This is one of the reasons why, for me, The Daily Show with Jon Stewart and now with Trevor Noah is so refreshing. It challenges the simplistic, non-factual, hypocritical things that people in the news say and do. By the way, Rush Limbaugh has a cumulative weekly audience of 13.25 million people, making it the most listened to radio show in the entire United States. It is interesting to note that as he lambastes liberal policies and politicians, he's making enough money to place him among the 11th highest earning celebrity in the world. But it is not just talk show hosts that engage in promoting hate through their own narrow and ill-informed perspective. I have watched some of the presidential candidates' debates, and I've listened to some of the racist, sexist, xenophobic statements made by people who are vying to become our president. Now, we've all heard of some of these, including candidates who believe that Muslim neighborhoods in this country should be patrolled by police, or a recent statement initially without any context that women who get an abortion should be punished. It is easy for me to be self-righteous and pontificate on the evils promulgated by such hate. Kind of like what I'm doing now. Indeed, there's nothing healthy about vitriolic, uncivil, hate-filled language and beliefs, particularly when it often promotes violence as well. But let me actually be more honest. When I watch a presidential debate, I find that there's a part of me that is totally mesmerized. It's like an awareness that in total disbelief as to what is transpiring in front of me, I get caught up in it. I find it fascinating. I am simultaneously appalled and fascinated, In fact, I am thoroughly entertained. And that epitomizes our culture. Our culture is one where entertainment becomes virtually sacred. It is all-consuming and all-pervasive. And we bow down to it because regardless of its content, it fills up our loneliness and our aloneness. It would appear then that the First Amendment right of freedom of speech means speech without censorship. As such, it has become a sacred cow. It has become a sacrosanct tenet within America's civil religion. And while it may seem odd coming from a liberal perspective, I can't help but wonder if hate-filled speech that engenders hatred in the streets has anything to do with freedom or with God-given rights. All freedoms have to have boundaries. And my concern is that we are selling hatred and violence through whatever means available. We are, in essence, in a business that promotes the commodification of hatred. It is a huge business. It is big entertainment. And I really don't care whether it is coming from conservatives, liberals, or whatever generalized label people use to stereotype others and themselves. The bottom line is that American culture is being infested with an enticing and addictive product that is being sold and swallowed wholesale. And to a certain extent, we all eat it up. And it's delicious. Because it is so much easier to blame others for our pain. And then it's only one step further to hate others, and then one more step and we can do violence to them. It's that easy, and it's that convenient. But it is our responsibility to deal with our own pain, our own feelings, our own behavior. It is our responsibility to see through the junk that is being sold to us, the hate-filled, sarcastic, disrespectful pablum that is packaged neatly in a box and stamped made in the USA. It happens, unfortunately, to be also one of our greatest exports. I am concerned about the soul of this country. I am concerned about the spiritual well-being of its people. I think there are much better ways to feed our spirit than with the hatred and violence that we see and hear. Our spirits, that which gives us life and hope and purpose, is our compassion and our love. This is the place from which we need to foster truth, fairness, beauty, and justice. I often think of Rebecca Parker's and Rita Brock's book, Saving Paradise, and their understanding that the first millennium of the Christian era in the West was centered on life and paradise in this world. Let me know that Rebecca Parker is actually presently a visiting minister at All Souls UU in Washington, D.C. this year. And I went on the website, and All Souls is offering a study of her book, as we did a couple of years ago ourselves. But she's calling the class Paradise Spirituality, Reweaving Sacred Community for the Liberation of All Life. What a neat title, Paradise Spirituality. And this is her description. Paradise is of this world, not as a nostalgic past or a post-mortem future, but as a multidimensional reality of grace, struggle, beauty, and abundance. We'll learn about ancient religious traditions, especially forgotten strands of Christianity, which existed before ideas of redemptive violence centered on the crucifixion, which led to church-sanctioned holy war, colonization, and conquest. With its emphasis in the second millennium on a dead Christ and an otherworldly heaven, Christian Europe sanctioned violence through crusades, the Inquisition, witch hunts, and empire building. The latter allowed for the obliteration or acculturation of native peoples throughout the entire world. Empire building was accomplished through companies. Colonization was immensely lucrative, both for the monarchies and for businesses. And today, actually, let me just give you an idea. This is typical of what happens in the second millennium at this point, in the kind of Christianity that is fairly traditional, even very conservative. Someone in this congregation went to a fairly conservative church and brought back this. This is a nail or a spike. This was given to the congregation on Easter. This is Easter. And of course, it talks about the good news of the resurrection and so on, but this is the nail and, of course, the crucifixion. And this is what Parker and Brock are talking about, is the fact that in the first millennium, it was centered on life itself and on paradise in this world. The second millennium, it's centered on basically the kind of death focus that the crucifixion engages in. Today, or let me go back 74 years. IG Farben Bayer was the most powerful German corporate cartel in the first half of the 20th century and the single largest profiteer from the Second World War. Why is this important? In part because IG Farben Bayer was the only German company in the Third Reich that ran its own concentration camp. That concentration camp was Auschwitz. A pharmaceutical company owned a slave and death camp. I'm not saying that businesses, simply because they are businesses, are demonic, but I do believe with David Corton that corporations rule the world and build empires. And I'm not convinced that a corporation's first priority is serving in healthy ways the fundamental needs of people and our world. We know today, for example, that our prison system is big business. The shareholders of the two largest corporations in the prison industrial complex make literally hundreds of millions of dollars. We also know that there are six monolithic corporations that control 90% of the media in the United States. In 1983, there were 50 corporations who controlled the majority of news media in this country. Today, there are six. And it's not just that the news that they control all forms of entertainment. And one of them is Disney, unfortunately. Even the internet is increasingly dominated by three companies only: Google, Yahoo, and Microsoft. The point is, our culture just eats up all the entertainment and systems of big business that are fed to us, including presidential debates that are hate-filled and bigoted, without really questioning much of what is going on. Hate-filled language and media are enticing forms of communication because it gets us off the hook. We can deny our own responsibility. We can deny our culpability. No wonder hate has become a commodity. I struggle against the use of violent language all the time. All too often I fall short of my own values, and I realize how insipid, how ingrained, how habitual this language of hate and violence is within me and within our culture. Rush Limbaugh did not invent this stuff. But such people seem to have taken it to a point where both the media and populace just eat it up. It's truly a whopper. And it has exacerbated what already exists by continuing to engender American society with an aura of hatred. But we need to be whole. We need to be who we truly are, not what our consumer society says we are. And what we truly are spirits and souls and beings of compassion and givers of life and of beauty. So let us choose not what we have been taught to buy into, but what we know is in our hearts. Let us choose truth over injustice, compassion over hate, love over violence. Let us choose ourselves, and let us choose each other. And let us choose to help one another do so, because we need one another, and the world needs to be healed. May it be so. Amen.